I am not sure I can hear Mr. McConaughey. In fact, I'm sure I can't hear Mr. McConaughey, so let's ask our...
Hang on, can you hear me now, Mr. Simon?
I can hear you, Mr. McConaughey. Very good to be with you. Wait, could you ask me again if I can hear you?
Can you hear me now, Mr. Simon?
All right, all right, all right!
All right!
All right,
now we're live.
You clearly are the professional who can do it much better than I can. Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much for being with us. I'm so glad that you can join us, and I'm so glad that you can join our listeners, who will have a lot of interesting things to ask you. So, Mr. McConaughey, you're ready for all this?
Listo, sir. I am ready.
I enjoyed the memoir. There's a theme that comes up again and again, and that's when you read about some of your childhood, it's painful. There's a lot of violence. Your father beat your mother and you. Your mother threw you into the river to sink or swim. How do you wind up seeing this, as you do in the book, as love?
Well, did you hear my reaction that was unrehearsed when you just hit the part about my mom throwing me in the river, sink or swim?
I know... As you know, as an actor who has to evince human emotions, we sometimes laugh when we have no other alternative.
Well, I think I'm laughing because I know there are plenty of alternatives. I believe that I find humor and beauty and see these stories that are often violent that I shared as real love stories, because the love in our family was never in question. Look, my parents loved hard. You see it in the stories in the book. My mom and dad, the way they communicated, it was physical. That's how today my mother at 90 years old still says, oh, yes, that's exactly what I needed to communicate. You know, that is what they did. They were divorced twice, married three times to each other. Even as a child, for whatever reason, I never questioned it. That I knew they loved each other. I didn't find out their two divorces. I found out in the last 10 years that those two extended vacations I thought my mother was on in Florida or wherever was one of their divorces. I didn't know. I mean, and so I can look at that and go, well, gosh, damn it. They lied to me and that they didn't raise me right. That'd be a cop out. The love was always there. Look, did I include the 98% of our life that was more hugs than hits? No, I didn't include that. Why didn't I include that? Because I think I love these love stories that I share that you're bringing up that are sometimes violent, because that's when the love was tested the most. That's when you thought in the normal world, oh, this is where it breaks down. Oh, this is when it's over. This is when Matthew needs to go to therapy. No.
Well, and that's why I asked the question, because nowadays, I mean, my God forbid, I think a school counselor would hear these stories and say, I've got to get you out of that.
Oh, CPS would show up at the house. They would have showed up at the house right away. But, you know, and Mr. Simon, there's one other thing.
Please call me Scooter. I can't tell you how much pleasure that would give me.
All right, Scooter. So listen here, Scooter. Here's what I was thinking. I mean, you know, was it, you know, could you say and look at my circumstance and my mother's circumstance and my father's circumstance, everybody, and say what way were they victimized? Sure, you can say that. We can say that across the board in all of our lives. Mm-hmm. Now, in many situations, though, we do have the choice to say, okay, but am I a victim? Was I, like, in my life? Well, someone has said, oh, you were abused. No, I was not abused. I never was injured.
Yeah.
My parents never injured me. Did I, you know, get the belt instead of getting grounded at the time? Yeah, but I wasn't injured. Do I do it the same way? Do I raise my kids the same way my parents raised me? No, but I'm not judging my parents either. I look at me and my two brothers. I'm like, hey, we're doing all right. Mm-hmm.
I want to ask you about your year in Australia.
Hmm.
You were a Rotary exchange student. Australia,
that's right, Scooter.
Is a wonderful place.
Yes.
Doesn't sound like a great year for you. Can I get you to talk about it?
Oh, I'd love to talk about it. It was actually, as you know from reading the book, it's one of the greatest years of my life. If I didn't have that year, Scooter, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you today with the life I have.
that doesn't mean it wasn't really hard. It was one of the, it was the most difficult year of my life. I was 18 turning 19. Just, you know, getting my own freedom and independence as a person, as a young man, a time where I was heading into life with no curfew, a lot of success, a lot of green lights in my life. Coming out of high school, I was popular, just won most handsome, had a had a red sports car that was paid for, had a girlfriend, had a job, had cash in my pocket. Oh man, it was great. Had a 4 handicap too, Scooter.
Oh, and then I go to Australia. This is getting so hard to take, but go ahead. All right. Yeah.
So I go to Australia as an exchange student, just on a, like, hey, let's go take the adventure. You know, a year before college sounds great. My mom and dad thought it was a great idea. And boy, the brakes on my program were hit pretty hard. It was an immediate, I was suddenly in the with a family that I was told it was going to be on the outskirts of Sydney, mate. But the outskirts of Sydney. Which sounded great to my 18-year-old mind. Beaches, Elle McPherson, wow, here we go. Well, the outskirts of Sydney, mate, turned out to be in a little spot up the road there called Warner Vale, which was about 3 hours outside and inland from Sydney. And that was on a small...
By the way, you do a much better Australian accent than most any other American actor I've heard, but...
Well, maybe it's because I've told this story so many times.
Yeah.
But so I lived with this family. I was on my own. It was an odd time. There were some things that I was going through with there and with the family that I was questioning my own reality, tabbing certain things up to cultural differences when in fact, I look back and was like, oh, you know what? Maybe you shouldn't have done that or not done or stood up for that, this or that. Anyway, the story's in the book, but it was a really great time because, and a hard time because it's when I really started journaling in earnest because I had no friends. I had no phone. I didn't have that car. I didn't have the golf clubs to keep the 4 handicap. I didn't have the girlfriend. I didn't have the job. I did have a curfew. And my days and my nights turned into just writing in a journal, sneaking off to the bathtub at my bathroom at the end of the house, reading Lord Byron and taking my own solo time. I was sort of imploding, but it turned out good because I really learned the value of a Socratic dialogue. I only had me to talk to, me to figure stuff out with, and Scooter, it was painful, but you know what? I hung in there. I remember I gave a handshake before I went saying I'll stay the whole year. And I knew when I was going through my frustration and confusion over there, I had a hunch that if you just stick this out, there's a reward on the other side. There's a lesson. And I got to say, as you know from the book, there was. I mean, I got out of Australia. I came back and ran into hardships and crises that would have shook my floor before I went to Australia. That after Australia, I looked at was like, oh, this is no biggie. I got this because I just went through that year.
Once again, you and I say this with admiration. You seem determined not to take a circumstance that would make many people feel sorry for themselves, and to find something in it that keeps you going.
Well, boy, that'd be fun. Let's break that down. I think that's something that we all have that potential. And then you go, how do we do it? Because we don't want to be ignorant and we don't want to be Hallmark card, you know, inspirational self-help optimist. Hey, if you can dream it, you can do it. No, that's bullshit. Mm-hmm. You know, hey, the glass half full. No, it's half empty too. But how do we deal? The theory I bring up in the book that I love to try to apply to my life is when faced with the inevitable, get relative. So once you go, okay, this is the situation. Now, am I going to pull the parachute and get out of the situation? Well, if we decide, no, I'm not, I'm going to stick with this. Then I go pretty immediately. And I think we all have this potential to go, well, if I'm going to do it, if it's going to happen, if I'm going to look it in the eye, I'm going to whistle a ditty through this thing. I'm going to make the best of it. And that doesn't. And when we bring up earlier, when I laughed And there's I think great import. We don't give enough import to sense of humor. Humor at ourselves and our situations does not disregard the crisis that we're facing in our life. Usually, mm-hmm. we'd like to think it does, but actually, it seems to untie the knot in contradictions. It seems to untie the knot in conflict and helps us with ourselves and with others work through something and just go, geez, it's hard. But hey, while we're doing this, while we're working on the railroad, while we're, you know, in the assembly line, let's whistle a ditty through this thing. And I find that I usually find that I get out of it or learn the lesson sooner or and than I would if I was grumpy the whole way. If I said, oh, I'm a victim the whole way. And that doesn't apply to every crisis in life. I'm obviously there are some that you go, no, that's, you know, that sort of crisis. There was no really great way to upside to look at it. But in most things in our lives, I find that's a good default emotion to have humor and to see the upside and go, hey, if I'm dealing with the inevitable, I'm going to get relative here and I'm going to do this thing with as much pleasure as I can and see the light.
Let's see if we can make a little news here. Are you, Matthew McConaughey, going to run for governor of Texas?
I am not until I am.
And then right now, I am not. I got to tell you, I was hoping for something a little more.
Where are you? I mean, that's the best I can do right now, Scooter, because honestly, I am, you know, and what I say will be grabbed and run with. I really, that is honestly where I am. I don't have a secret in my pocket. You and I are doing audio right now. I don't have a memo in front of me that is, hey, I'm gonna hand this envelope when the time's right. I'm really, when I say I'm measuring it, when I say I'm really looking at it, that's what I really mean. And not, I'm looking at my life for the next chapter of what's my embassy? What's my category? How can I be most useful? I could argue on one side, there's a great value of the leadership in politics. It's a great category for that, for being able to make change and to be of service. Could also make the argument that that's a broken business right now. That whole politics needs fixing. Before we're talking politics, let's talk about the important thing, like, oh, democracy. Let's ask the important questions like, hey, United States, we really want to remain a United States of America, because a lot of us aren't acting like it. So I think, you know, I'm asking my questions like, where can I be most useful? Maybe I'm more useful as an informal leader. Maybe I have more influence informally. Maybe that's a smarter sacrifice for me. I'm not afraid of the sacrifices that would come with something like that for me and everyone else. But is it the right one for me? And that's some of the things I'm measuring for myself right now and my family and the most amount of people. It's got to work. It's got to be personal for me, but it's also got to be the most useful thing for the most amount of people.
May I ask to try and, for example, are you studying issues? Are you taking a look at things? Are you?
I'm studying issues, but I'm also not trying to get too in the weeds of the issues. Do I have opinions on issues? Yes. Have I shared them? Absolutely not. And on purpose. I'm not sharing them right now. There's groundwork. That's when I say, hey, let's go back. And I think before I want to talk about how I feel or anyone feels about a certain issue, which immediately creates a contradiction, which immediately has the opposing view trying to invalidate your point of view, which is one of the problems, I think, with how we communicate and what politics has become. It's not about validation of one's vision right now. It's about invalidation of the opposition. Well, that's not really a way forward. That's like just being a counterpuncher. If you're a boxer, you're just reacting to everything. Politicians aren't leading right now. They're reacting. And I get it. If the two-party system, if each party's mission statement, modus operandi, wake up in the morning, do whatever we have to do to preserve our party, make every decision we have to make just to preserve our party by hook or by crook, I don't care. Then it's obviously, it's really, that's not democracy. That's undemocratic. You're not making decisions on the basis of what's best for the most amount of people. And if it's all about invalidating your point of view because it opposes mine, I know what I'm against, but I don't know what I stand for. That's what politics it looks like today to me and so many others. Trust mm-hmm. issues in the basement. Not just in Texas, America, and the world. 30% of Americans trust their damn neighbors. That's really sad. We don't trust our neighbors. We don't. Then what happens? We start not trusting ourselves. This last 2 years didn't expose any new thing in America and our divide. I mean, it did help expose it because we all had to run and go bunker down and sort of say, I got mines and I'm hanging on to mines and I'm just going to protect me. I don't care about you. Well, that's not going to last. That's not an evolution. That what's scary to me is that great, you know, Abe Lincoln talked about it. You know, the great 19 of 21 great civilizations didn't fall because they were taken over from the outside. They fell because they imploded. They fell because of a civil war. They fell because they cannibalized themselves. That's what's scary when I look around the world in America right now.
I think anybody who starts quoting Lincoln is at least thinking of running for office.
hey, Scooter, he was a great wrestler too.
He was a great wrestler, actually. A lot of people don't know that side of him, but he absolutely was. Those long arms, yes. You know.
Yep, he sure was.
I have to ask you a very specific question. You must know what's coming. How do you feel? Do you support Texas's new abortion law?
Texas's new abortion law. So let me talk abortion. First off, I'm not where abortion's been an argument and a sway and since for a long, long time. Obviously, Roe v. Wade comes. That's a stance on it. People have their beliefs. I know people. I have friends and I have family that are like, no abortion, absolutely not. I listen. I understand where they're coming. I try to understand where they come from. I also understand a woman's right to choose. I understand that. I'm more of a choose guy. And hey, let's just make better choices. Let's prevent before we have to cure. But on this swinging scale of what we're saying and when we're saying, you know, a fetus is a life, and when is it okay to take it? This saying of 6 weeks, or 3 months, or 6 months, or never. Hey, come on. It's just a swinging scale we've been trying to find the balance of for decades. And this six-week thing, the SBA with Texas, no matter what, if you're in a position saying you in any way believe that it's okay for a woman to try to choose, the 6 weeks comes up a little short of when a woman can actually even make the choice, as far as I know. And how it, I don't know the details of how it deals with it, but I understand it's not something that takes in the rape and incest question as maybe responsibly as it should.
Let me interject. You do recognize if you were governor, you would have to know the details.
Oh, of course. Of course. I'd have to know the details of that and many, many other issues. I have to know a whole lot of details. I mean, governorship and politics, that's about administration. That's you become the governor. You're the CEO of the state. Yeah, absolutely. I also say that because I don't, in this conversation, before I've even chosen if I want to throw my foot in the race or not, again, I'm more concerned, and this may be reason why it's a good idea for me to run. It's also maybe reason why it's not a good idea for me to run. I'm more concerned with the larger questions of what the hell has politics become. Is it a business? Is it an embassy to get in where you can? Is it a fixed game? Can you get in there and do more than just put on a bunch of Band-Aids, Scooter, that are going to be ripped off the day you get out? If so, I'm not into that. That's not where I'm going to use my currency. But that also, those questions and the fact that those questions matter to me, and I'm trying to find out those questions and they'll matter to a lot of people, Could also be is also a good resume reason for saying, well, you, and that's the kind of thinking we kind of need right now, because this thing needs to be shaken up. So yes, I know. You got to know all those details. I'm not going to go into those right now. That 6 weeks seems a little short for me. I'm not God. Abortion is a position that you're sort of being asked as humans to play God for. I think there is context to situations, as I brought up with the rape and incest at times. And I would like to, look, what would I love more is if we can sit there and go, yes, you know, we have abortion. It's legal. Let's make better choices before we have to, do it. Before we have to get it individually. Let's get a values campaign going where we sit there and go, okay, I understand sometimes it's going to happen. We're going to need to go back and say, you know what? It's not the right place. I'm not the right, I don't have the right position for this child to come into in the world. Maybe it's a new, however that the child to be would be unwanted or a mistake. I think you should be able to have the choice to go, you know what? I bogeyed here, screwed up. This is not as didn't go as I planned. And I'd like an out or to be able to have my own life as a woman, as a mother, as parents.
We have a lot of questions coming in, so let's begin to get to them. We're going to go first to Teddy Wilson and tell Josephine Carroll to please stand by. And by the way, let me also remind you that we are recording all of today's event. You hear portions of it on your local NPR station and on Weekend Edition Saturday. So there's a question. There's a chance we might use your question on the radio. So be nice.
Or don't be nice.
We meant only in terms of your of language. You can certainly ask tough questions and... that's why we're in business. Teddy Wilson, I hope you've joined us.
Howdy, Matthew and Scott. How y'all doing?
Hello, Teddy.
Matthew, it's great to get to listen to you. I've been a fan of yours for a while. I'm a fellow Texan. And, you know, I think a lot of people outside of Texas, I think in some ways you're viewed as almost kind of a quintessential Texan. Right. And I know you grew up in Longview and you went to college at UT. And I know you traveled all over Texas, and I know that you understand what a big, beautiful, diverse place it is.
Yeah.
And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that, about how different Texas is, I think, in a lot of ways than people outside the state perceive it. And how has that informed the choices you've made as an actor, as a performer?
Sure. Thanks, Teddy. Yeah, so Texas, you know, big Texas, everything's bigger than Texas. Don't mess with Texas. Our brand, our badge is our independence. I don't think we're here. I think we're here to lead, not secede. When that topic comes up, but our brand is independence. Our brand, and that's why I would say, in many ways, even when Scooter, when Texas stepped outside of our state lines to go talk about the voting laws, I think we trespassed. I think we stepped outside ourselves. We proposed and postured our brand of Texas as being essentially Republican, which is not. Is it a historically red state? Yes. But our brand is independence. We live in Texas. Our home is the United States, but our brand is independence. That's part of how we're raised. When you're raised in Texas, I know myself and many others, there's reasons you do something well. There's reasons you get consequences for doing something wrong. Now, if you're a believer, one of those reasons is because of your God. Another reason is because, hey, you're American. That's your patriotism. Another reason is because of your family name. You do this because you're a Jones or a Smith or a McConaughey, and you better not do this because you're a Jones or Smith or McConaughey. Everyone has a version of those three. In Texas, you have a fourth one. Do it well because you're Texan, And there are consequences if you don't, because that's un-Texan. So it was another measuring stick for me growing up. And I think it's ingrained into our honor in our state. I think, you know, we have to watch as Texans, especially when we're doing well economically, like we are now, we have to watch that our pride doesn't overrun our honor. We have to watch, we're a very confident state. We also have to watch that our confidence doesn't lead to arrogance. How it's led to roles that I've taken, I don't know. I mean, I would say this. The great thing about Texans is in our blood, we're such an identified state, but we're not really, I think the word secular. We don't just hold Texans in our state. We like to say, be essentially Texan. Now get out there. Now go fill your passport, son, ma'am, daughter. Get out there in the world and go out and then come back and tell us stories about it. So we do like to export, and we have a great confidence. I think we raise essentially our children with the confidence to go explore the world as who you are. And part of that is being a Texan, and come back and tell us stories about it. So we're not an insulated state. We're not like a shy state. Oh, well, let's just stay here. And that's when I say, hey, when Texas does it well, we're here to lead, not secede. But we gotta keep checking ourselves here, because right now we are in many ways the state is winning most popular at the high school prom. We gotta watch that. We gotta watch for not looking in the mirror.
Sounds like you're an independent.
Look, I'll tell you what. I know this, Scooter.
Yeah.
Give me the whatever policy you got out there, whatever can be administrated, whatever leaders in position, none of those can do it for each of us. You there, Scooter? I said, yeah, one of the challenges we have as a people is when we are trying to get our leaders that we want in a position of leadership, we get off our proverbial out of our chair and onto the edge of the porch, and we root them on, and we break a sweat. And then as soon as we get our leader in position, instead of coming off the porch and becoming a soldier for the cause and the vision, we have a tendency to go sit back down in our chair in the shade of our porch. Mm-hmm. And leaders can't do it for us. We want change. You and I got to look in the mirror. Each one of us, if every one of us individually can go look in the mirror and go, I'm going to do a little bit better today. I'm going to be a little more fair today. That's where the army starts. Now, what is government's position? I think government's position is to provide paths and opportunities for people that are willing to work hard to pursue their own, as the Declaration of Independence would say, version of happiness. Mm-hmm. I would call that a physical, mental, spiritual health. And that's also economics. But a government can't do that for us. A leader can't do that for us. We got to check ourselves in the mirror, and then we have to check government in the mirror to say, hey, well, you got to provide it. We're looking to you to provide a path and an opportunity for those of us out in the world that say, hey, I'm willing to work hard to go get what I want. And I'm willing to learn and get educated to do it. I need, give me equal opportunity to get there. Give me a shot to pursue. Show me a path. That's what I think government's supposed to do.
Let's go to other questions. People are really eager to speak with you, Matthew McConaughey. Catherine, is this you?
This is Catherine.
Hi, Catherine.
Good to meet you. You're with Matthew McConaughey. Good to meet you. Please let me go ahead.
No, it's wonderful to speak to you. You're an incredible actor and activist, and thank you for all of that. There's a lot of talk about whether you're going to run for office. Is that in the cards?
Well, as I was saying to Scooter earlier, Catherine, it's something, and I've said it before, it's something I am measuring. I'm looking at where I can be most useful going forward. Mm-hmm. That politics would be obviously a formal embassy for me to pursue, to try and run. And I understand the great privilege that would be. And there's great power and influence to be able to serve through politics. I also understand sacrifices that come with that. I've never been one that shied away from a sacrifice in my life. If it's the right kind of risk, and if it's the right risk for me, my family, and the most amount of people, then that's something I'm going to, I would jump into and make a run for. I also have to measure, is it that right kind of risk? Is it the right embassy for me? Could I do more smart work, hard work, and influence as an informal leader? As Scooter and I've been talking about, and I've alluded to many times already in this interview, politics is a bit of a broken business right now. And I think the only problem with what I just said was saying a bit of. It is a broken business. it's a little ass backwards. The priorities are out of whack. Parties are doing whatever they can to preserve themselves at the consequence of the serve of the people. It needs a check. Politics and politicians need a check right now. And this divide is a major, major problem in our country, not just our state. It's a major divide in society right now. And we got to figure a way out to heal this before, I'd say this, and Scooter was calling me an independent a minute ago. In spirit, at least I'm an independent. I talked about someone, hey man, I'm thinking now is a time to be aggressively centrist. I think it's actually essential right now to balance the ship of democracy. Mm-hmm. And I think it was scary. Now I'm looking at it, I'm going, it's more than scary. It's actually necessary. And when I say that, I've some colloquial Texan friends of mine have been like, oh yeah, middle of the road, McConaughey, ain't nothing there but yellow lines and armadillos. And I'm like, hey, well, I'm walking down this yellow line. And let me tell you, the armadillos are running free. You know why? Because the traffic on the left and the right are so far to the left and the right, their rubber on their tires ain't even on the road. So it's free and clear over here. And I think the center now, or the middle, that independent of an independent spot, whether it's called independent or not, I'm not going to give it a title. I think that's a dare now. That's not a compromise. That's a dare.
Let's, Catherine, I want to put you on the spot. I hope to get just a yes or no answer. We also want Jess to know. I don't know if Jess is, I don't know the pronoun for Jess. So Jess, you're going to be next. Catherine, do you want him to run?
Yes, I do.
Why?
Okay.
And my most of my family, especially my father, is a Republican, and he is very upset about how divided the country is due to how polarizing Trump has been as a social figure. He wrote a letter and asked him not to run again, even though he's a Republican, because he said nothing is going to get done for us to all come together if you do that. And that really surprised me.
Yeah.
And I do think that people like you that can unite need to run.
Well, thank you. let's be quite clear and honest with ourselves. This idea of uniting, we're not going to get to a kumbaya utopia where we're all just getting along. No, but I do believe that real unition that we don't have right now at least gives honest credit to confrontation. And true confrontation at least gives validation to the opposition. Right now, we don't even have true confrontation because we don't even validate our opposition. We're all about invalidating. So you can't have unity without confrontation. And we're going to continue to have confrontation. That's the beauty of democracy. Right now, I would argue we don't even have true confrontation.
Let's go to Christian Smalls now. Let's ask Jess to stand by. Christian Smalls, I'm told Christian Smalls was an Amazon worker and involved in union battles. Is Christian Smalls there?
Christian hey, Smalls. How you doing?
Fine.
Hey, how you doing?
You're with Matthew McConaughey.
I'm honored. I just jumped in. I'm out here in front of Amazon as we speak, organizing these workers out here in Staten Island. And I'm enjoying the conversation. And I'm honored to actually have the opportunity to say hello. So thank you.
Well, howdy, Christian.
Appreciate it. And I also, while I have the opportunity, you know, Matthew, I want to get your take on the labor movement real quick, if you don't mind. We definitely would love to have some type of support from yourself and others of your stature, being a prominent person in the film industry. So what is your take on, you know, Amazon workers unionizing? And are you willing to support us here in New York?
Well, thank you for the question and the calling, Christian. I did, you know, right now, I don't know enough to give you an opinion on the Amazon workers and what's going on with your union there in New York. You know, I've seen the upsides of unions. I'm a part of one, guilds, et cetera. I've seen where they're needed. I've seen where the coalition has helped people out that needed it. I've, you know, also understand and have listened to many arguments against them. As I said, I come from a family and an upbringing of sort of independent outlaws that were actually, I would say my family would have been, mom and dad would have been probably non-union. I understand them and how and see the need for them a little more than how I was raised how I was raised did. But I'd have to, you know, I'd have to hear a specific situation to give you an opinion on where I would stand with the union. I don't know enough about what's going on with Amazon or what your situation in New York is to give you an opinion of saying, hey, I'll be on your side or not. But if you want to tell me more about it, I'd listen.
Absolutely. I have a long story, but I think a lot of people may have known already, but I was fired last year for holding a protest over COVID safety. You know, I was catapulted into the media spotlight, definitely been supported by NPR several times. Several articles came out. Jeff Bezos himself had a meeting about me, calling me not smart or articulate, ironically, to make me the whole face of the unionizing efforts against Amazon. So I've been out here ever since. It's been over a year and a half now since I've been fired. I've been organizing workers ever since. And here in New York, we started a independent union campaign about 5 months ago. It's very underreported, but it should be talked about a lot more because this is historical, what we're doing with these workers. This could be the first union to actually be successful for Amazon in the United States. So,
right.
You know, I would advise you just to check it out. You can look me up and I would love to connect with you offline, you know, any right. other time.
Outside of this yeah. All right. You know, on this, and let's all just, and this isn't me trying to just wash over the whole thing, but in not knowing the details, I just want to say this. We're running into a lot of new, brand new challenges in our life. You look at, you know, the Facebook whistleblowing. You got what are the profits and safety issues of today with COVID? Shook our floor. We didn't have the playbook. We still don't have the playbook. It's a cultural, political, and biological phenomenon. And I'm not saying that we should say, oh, okay, well, it's really hard. I understand. We'll just let that slide. No, I am just saying we need everyone to hustle to try to figure out how to best get through this, as with the situation, even like with big companies and tech and what responsibilities are online for safety and profit. But these are new frontiers we're dealing with, and is it going to be awkward figuring out our way, navigating through what the rules, laws, expectations are in these new particular? You damn right it is. And we'll do that
but let's just admit that they're new, that they're new.
Christian, thank you so much. We want to get to a couple more questions before we have to let Mr. McConaughey go. Let's go to Jess. I hope you're there. Jess, thanks for hanging in there with us. Jess, is that you?
Hi, how's it going? Hi, Matthew. I'm super
Hello, nervous. Jess.
I'm a big fan, but thank you so much for having me up here. My question to you was, so recently in Texas, the Texas Blockchain Council was formed, which is aiming to make Texas a leader in blockchain innovation. So I kind of want to get your thoughts. What was your stance on cryptocurrency and blockchain technology?
Oh, my.
Well, you know what? I'm sorry. This is going to be a short answer. I don't know enough, and I have not even been interested to look into too much cryptocurrency right now. I'm still learning about what the heck it is and how it works. And is it something that will be a lasting currency? Which people have opinions on that. So that's really about all I can say about that right now.
I appreciate your honesty. And just to add to that, because I know I see a lot of people from the, you know, blockchain community, it's not just about the cryptocurrency, it's about the innovation that blockchain is bringing. And like something that we saw yesterday with Facebook, like blockchain technology could have solved that through decentralized servers. So I really hope that you take the time to look into it, but I appreciate your honest answer.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you.
Let's take, we have a last question for all the time we have today from Dr. Aditi Nurikar.
Hi, guys. Sorry for the connection delay. Hi, Matthew. I loved your book. It was wonderful. I'm also big fan of your wife and her work with Women of Today. I wanted to ask you, you're probably one of the most prominent Texans, and I wanted to ask you specifically about what you think you and other very prominent Texans who have a major platform can do to help with the vaccination efforts. We know that Texas is really struggling with COVID, and you mentioned the cultural kind of barriers, and I would love your thoughts. Thank you.
Great. Well, look, I, from the beginning, which is almost what, close to 2 years ago, I was like everybody else. What the hell's going on? Now, I was talking about earlier, one of my responses to the union question, there's a lot of new problems. We've been talking about safety and profit. Safety and profit's actually a good scale to put up there when we're talking about COVID. You know, can you go back to work? Texas said, let's go back to work. Abbott said, let's go back to work. I'm fine with that. What I wasn't fine with, and what I did advocate early on, and what I would have said, what I did say, I put out PSAs through Texas, like wear the damn mask. The science is there. It's a small-term inconvenience for long-term freedom. And it was like, yeah, but we got to go back to work. We want to party. I'm like, exactly. Wear the damn mask so we can go back to work sooner and longer and party sooner and longer. Yes, the mask. Texans, you know, and I said our brand is independence. But nobody likes to be told what to do. I get it. And we're proving that, especially us adults in America and in Texas, don't like being told what to do. Okay. All right. So we were scared of the word mandate, I believe, more than we're scared of the damn mask. It's the word mandate that just raised up the boogeyman in our independent spirited Texan hearts and minds, and in many places around America. The mask was and still is a good idea. It was proven. Again, I think we put our privileges ahead of our principles on that one. I would have said everyone's got to wear the damn mask, and you know, you can be pissed off at me if you want, but more of us are going to be in the game for the long term if we do. And I think that's been proven. So I've really been baffled with our resistance to that. Vaccine becomes another question, similar, but another question, because it's different than a mask. There's more of it. There's more, for some people, it's more of a sacrifice, and it's still a little bit more of a mystery. But the mask was always like, dude, it's a tool. It's the seatbelt. Come on.
That one I never quite got, and has really ticked me off at how slow our reaction has been and resistant we were and still are to that.
Well, I want to thank everyone. We've just about run out of time. I want to thank everyone for being with us. This has been a new experience for me, Twitter Spaces. I enjoyed it a lot. I look forward to it. Our thanks to Matthew McConaughey. His memoir, still on the bestseller list, is titled Green Lights. Mr. McConaughey, thanks so very much for being so generous with your time.
Scooter, my pleasure. It was a joy talking to you. And thank you, everyone out there who checked in. And thank you, everyone who came in with questions. I appreciate it. Everyone, just keep living.
Well, and yes, thanks, everyone, for joining us today on Twitter Live. And thanks, everybody, who listens to us on your local public radio station. We hope you'll join us this Saturday for Weekend Edition on your local NPR station. So thanks very much for being with us. And take care of yourselves out there. We're very grateful.